be less than you'd find in a refuge, which I find very strange. And interesting enough, in the sanctuary, the Board of Game has jurisdiction, while in the refuge, Fish and Game and DNR commissioners have it. But I guess the amendment that Representative Phillips is proposing is the removal of hunting a brown bear within McNeil.
That's requested by Fish and Game.
Refuge.
But this is exactly what would prohibit the stopping of the fish ladder if this is pulled out. Now, you can hunt moose, you can trap in there, you can fish in there, you can do all sorts of things, but not hunt brown bear. That gives them some satisfaction that should bears be moved off into the Paint River drainage, that they are protected.
Kyle, you mentioned something about having problems with the federal people. Can we go through that scenario again?
Yes, sir. We are concerned about this item number C, hunting of brown bears, is prohibited for two reasons. One is that simply it is a legislative precedent. There is nowhere else in the state of Alaska, a state refuge, where hunting is legislatively prohibited. Number two, it is that we on a regular basis deal with the federal government. The federal government is very interested, or some people within the federal government, restricting hunting access within various federal refuges within Alaska, and we're simply worried about that as a precedent issue. I should say that we are aware, and Representative Rusendorf is correct, that there is concern by the Friends of McNeil to limit or eliminate hunting of brown bear in the refuge. That's what I mentioned, that this issue will be before the Board of Game this fall, and the Board of Game certainly can, though none of us can guarantee what they'll do, but has the ability to restrict or eliminate brown bear hunting, or any other type of hunting for that matter, within the refuge. I should mention also, we share with Representative Rusendorf the strong concern that this whole matter come to a conclusion. I believe, I don't know if it's in your packets, I know we were copied on a letter to Representative Rusendorf, though, from the Outdoor Council, where they have suggested that if this stays in there, they may consider suing. And it is a hard choice whichever way you go, but we're just seriously concerned about the precedence.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given the fact that the State Board is in all likelihood going to consider it this year, and if we wanted to avoid, I think, the pulling out of the Friends of the McNeil from their interest here, and also the Outdoor Council, might it make sense, rather than legislatively mandating that, to mandate that the State Board make a determination instead? I mean, you could perhaps, and I haven't run this by the Speaker, but I'd invite his comments on it, but if you said that the State Board of Game shall determine whether the hunting of brown bears within the McNeil River State Game Refuge should be prohibited, you effectively accomplish the same thing, although with a less degree of certainty. But you might keep yourself out of any hot water by doing that.
If I may, Mr. Speaker, Representative Boyer, we certainly have no objection to that. If the legislature does not statutorily close hunting, I feel it's a virtual certainty that the Friends of McNeil and others will have proposals in front of the Board of Game this fall to ask them to consider that. But it might be a good way to go.
Representative Ulmer.
How do we handle the Pack Creek situation? Is that only by board regulation, or does it have a different land status?
Board regulation.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, actually, we handle it by board regulation, but it also does have a different land status. Pack Creek, except for the tide lands, is national forest. The Pack Creek State is only the tide lands, but in either case, it's closed by action of the Board of Game.
Thank you.
Opposed to that language? You're not?
Just offering the idea.
Mr. Chairman, the concept that Representative Boyer brought out is appealing to me, at least. I think it's proper, if you look at the Constitution, Board of Fish, Board of Game make these biological decisions, and I think, frankly, that's where it should be made, and not here legislatively mandating this or that for Fish and Game. I think those decisions got to be left up to the professionals and to the Board of Fish and Board of Game.
Okay, it's my intention, man, to hold the bill over till tomorrow, and we'll see if we can work out some language that satisfies enough people. Next bill will take up House Bill or Senate Bill 158. Bill 158. Mr. Attorney General.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I appear here on behalf of the administration in support of committee substitute for Senate Bill 158. Administration supports the bill, although I think it takes no position one way or the other with respect to subsection 2 of the amendments to Section 43.05225, it's somewhat irrelevant to the central issues with respect to the compounding of the tax for delinquent royalty and delinquent taxes.
Although it has not yet come before us, we have had at least distributed to us a document by Representative Farnell. I would like him to look at that. It seems to me that it's trying to get the legislature in the negotiating process.
I have been handed a copy of it by Representative Barnes, and I've read it.
Representative Barnes, is it your intention to offer this as an amendment?
No, it isn't my intention at all, but I wanted the Attorney General to have it to look at so that he could formulate an opinion on it. You don't have to do it right now.
Oh, that's a comment made that's welcome. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Attorney General, do you happen to know how much money is at stake in each month of applicability of this bill? We have an amendment proposed that would delay the effective date by 2 months. I was just wondering if you had any idea how much money would be at stake in that proposal.
I do not. We could not determine that unless we knew the amount of the tax liability. Much of this tax liability is being ascertained now by the Department of Revenue and the Department of Natural Resources. I don't think we're dealing with finite numbers there.
Mr. Attorney General, in the overall context of the thing, I presume that you're going to be working towards settlement between now and whenever the effective date of this is. Would you see this as a significant incentive for settlement?
Yes. I believe the bill is constructive. And after all, if we had tax obligations and we went to the bank to borrow the money to pay them, we would execute a note, wouldn't we, for the amount of the principal tax and accrued interest, and then we would begin paying interest on that note. That's a form of compounding of interest, and that's not unlike what happens here. Now, I recognize that some of the taxpayers have said that they have not received assessments timely, and therefore they have, might say, objections, certainly more than reservations about this bill. But I think that the central thesis of the bill is sound, and I think it will serve to aid the state in collecting outstanding royalty and tax obligations, and therefore should be adopted.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. And when does a tax become delinquent? Is that spelled out in the statutes?
Yes.
Exactly when that is?
Yes. Basically, it's delinquent when it's due and payable.
So if I continue, does that mean when the notice of assessment is received, the initial notice of assessment, that this would start running right then?
Well, certainly it won't start running until essentially there's a determination of the amount, because you don't know, well, the amount in which it's running on, number one, but certainly after the assessment is made and received.
Attorney General, I have an amendment which will change the effective date from October 31st to December 31st. Does the administration feel strongly about that? In the overall context of the amounts that we're talking about here, would that impact your negotiations in any negative fashion?
I believe not. I think it's proper to have the reasonable period of time to phase in this method of computing interest on delinquent taxes and royalties, and I believe that that's properly a date which the legislature could adjust without making significant difference in the tax and royalties due and payable to the state.
Are there further questions for the Attorney General? Thank you. I will at this time offer an amendment on page 3 of the bill, Section 7, to change the effective date from October 31st to December 31st. Is there objection?
Objection.
There is objection. Discussion?
Question.
Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jackal?
Yes.
Representative Kopanen?
Yes.
Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Olmer?
Yes.
Representative Boyer?
Yes.
Co-Chair McLean?
Yes.
Co-Chair Navarre?
Yes.
Can you leave one there?
There are further objections, or is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Phillips.
I do have a question. Probably more for Department of Revenue than anything else. Everybody for revenue?
Nope.
No, everyone's broke.
I could try to answer it.
Yeah, I bet you can. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm really getting at is that I've been hearing these stories about the Department of Revenue not giving them the, you know, the tax assessment or the bill or whatever you want to call it. And I wanted to ask a few questions about the history of this thing and how this became, you know, became what it is now in order to make a judgment call on this bill. It would have been nice to have the Department of Revenue here.
Mr. Chairman, was Revenue notified this day before us?
Just like everybody else. Arguably, they should be paying attention.
Could we have another at ease while we call them?
Mr. Chairman, this is the governor's bill, and, you know.
You'd think they'd be here.
Yes.
This bill passed the Senate before last year.
Good day. And when and if someone from the Department of Revenue comes over, we'll take the bill up at that time. And we'll move to House Bill 15, which is supplemental, second supplemental. Cheryl, would you want to join us?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Cheryl Fraska, Director, Division of Budget Review. The proposed House Finance CS, the first two sections were sections that were in the original bill. I think Representative Larson can speak to those.
Section 3.
Okay. Section 3 provides the amount to the longevity bonus program that had been vetoed by the former governor, $5 million. Section 4 appropriates $500,000 from the Mental Health Trust income account to the Department of Law for the costs associated with YSB State. For this current fiscal year. Right now, their billings to date are about $450,000 as of the most recent billings.
That was before this last week.
Well, okay.
What, we got another billing?
No, this last week, I'm sure it's up to $500,000 by now.
Section 5 is the most current judgments and claims against the state. $508,600. Section 6 is to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, Army National Guard for fuel and related costs during this fiscal year. The department had requested $120,000 for this purpose, and we'd approved 96.7. Section 7, for the Bear Survey on Seward Peninsula, this is a committee addition to the bill. I don't know what the details are on that.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question there. You don't know why we need to. Okay.
Section 8 is to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, again, to the Disaster Relief Fund, and it's for additional costs as a result of the 1989 Anchorage flood. And these were costs that were incurred the following spring and summer that they did not realize at the time of breakup the prior year. So this will pay for those additional costs associated with that flood. Section 9 is fire suppression costs, $25.5 million. The department had requested $26 million. The governor's original budget was request to the committee was $24.5 million. We revised it and requested an additional million. Right now, the department has about $470,000 left in this current fiscal year after it pays all of its bills. And so with the additional million, they'd have about $1.5 million for the rest of the fiscal year. Section 10. $325,000 from the general fund to DNR Parks and Parks for their program receipts that they will lose for fees that are generated on mental health lands. Those fees have to go into the mental health trust fund, and instead the department is losing those fees, and this will replace those fees. Section 11 is $900,000 to operate the Main Bay and Tutka hatcheries. This was the result of a veto last session, and these are the unfunded costs associated with those two hatcheries. Section 12 is $150,000 to Fish and Game for additional costs associated with the implementing the changes in the subsistence law as a result of McDowell v. State. Section 13, $127.7 for Fish and Wildlife Protection for increased costs associated with travel and transportation of enforcement personnel. Okay. Section 14, $911,000 for public safety. This is for the troopers, enforcement personnel, search and rescue operations, prisoner transportation. They had requested almost $1.2 million, and we had revised it down to $911,000. And on these, since the bill was introduced, we have gone back to the agencies and asked them to still see if their estimates for the rest of the fiscal year as far as needs is still current. And in just about all instances, it is. Section 15, $275,000 is to DOT for the condemnation settlement on Telephone Hill down here in Juneau, the 1984 issue concerning the Capitol complex that was wanted to be built back then. Section 16, $749.2 to DEC for the domestic wastewater program. These were, again, a veto last year by the former governor, and the department was able to make up some of the lost funds due to vacancies, but still is about the $749,000 short for this current fiscal year. Section 17 is to CNRA for the renter's equivalency rebate program. There's been an increase in the number of applicants to this program, and previously they've been able to take from the other senior citizen tax relief program, but they have decided that they're not going to do that any longer, and this is the additional dollars that are needed for that program. Otherwise, they will have to prorate the rebates to the renters. Section 18, $3,500 to correct an underpayment to the city of Hoonah for revenue sharing. And in Section 19 is $1,162 for correcting an error to city of Selawik. Section 20 is corrections personal services shortfall for the current fiscal year, $2 million.
Chairman. Representative Barr.
Thank you. Through the chair to Cheryl, if I may. Could you tell us what that personal services cost is?
Mr. Chairman, I have some information here. I didn't bring all of my backup. Most of it's underfunding for personal services throughout the institutions, as well as some of the administration and support functions.
Okay.
But that's what it is.
Mr. Chairman? probably when it comes back with the information, we could also have it noted why corrections may be different from the other agencies in result of the personal service reductions.
Because we're dealing with bad people.
No, if we took, if we didn't fund the increased cost in benefits last year, I'd be interested to know why that affected corrections more than the other agencies.
Okay. Section 21 is also for corrections. This is other non-personal services related operating costs, almost $1.1 million. Originally, the statewide operations requested then for $959,000. It was reduced to $908,000, as reflected in the CS. Section 22 is $100,000 for the university for the Alaska Space Grant Program. This will match $150,000 in federal funds for a grant from NASA. Section 23 is $150,000 for university again for hazardous waste disposal and storage. They've been cited by several federal agencies for noncompliance in disposal of hazardous waste and materials, and this will about half funds the request by about 50%. Section.
Mr. Chairman, can I go back to Section 22 again? Was this part of a governor's veto last year, or why are we in this situation now?
Mr. Chairman, this was a grant that the university has received since January.
Okay.
So that's why, and I believe it's also in the 92 budget as well. They have two grants. Section 24 is to the court system for Amarada Hess, 36.7 for additional costs associated with the judge here in Juneau in this case. Section 25, $115,000 for the Public Defender Agency. It's for additional costs for five first-degree murder cases that they've had during this fiscal year for which they did not budget. Section 26, $45,500 for increased postage costs associated with the general services mail room.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question, please.
Representative Barnes.
On that particular increase in postage costs, do you have any idea why there's an increase there? Because, for example, the legislators have had $4,000 for our mailing and our stationery and all those things since time immemorial. And I just wondered if, you know, if there was a reason why we should give them so much more money for mailing and...
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnes, this is as a result of the to mail out paychecks. That's what they attribute a major cost to also going to a twice a month payroll that the ACPAY system has done. That coupled with the increase in postage costs put them into a situation where they would need the supplemental funds.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Section 27, $500,000 for lease payments to the Department of Administration. There was a reduction in the leasing budget last session. The legislature included intent language suggesting if they were in an underfunding situation to request a supplemental. They were able to revise it down some because DEC did not move into its new place this year, nor I think it's the archives in Juneau. So it's not as much as was vetoed last year. So they realized some savings, but still are going to be approximately $500,000 short this year. Section 28 is $52,600 for international airports for fuel costs. This is a section that you could delete. The department has been able to reallocate existing dollars and cover the shortfall. Section 29 is $979 to be appropriated to false pass. This is for monies within 1 year for when a city incorporates, the state holds its land in trust, and then it transfers it to the new incorporated city. And these are the funds that the state made off of the land or the proceeds that the state received from this land while it was held in trust. Section 30, $50,000 to Department of Natural Resources, Parks and Outdoor Rec for the Chugach State Park access litigation. This has been a case that's been being worked on for the last 3 years, and they've reached a point where they now have expert witnesses. They're encountering additional costs outside of the normal routine, and so they need some additional dollars so they can go to trial on this case. Section 31, $650,000 to the university for a court-approved mediated construction claim settlement associated with the UAF library building as a result of construction changes. If the settlement is not provided, the funds are not provided for the settlement, the university indicates that they will go to trial on this case. Section 32, $314,000 for the court system for operating expenses. This was a section included by the Finance Committee. Section 33 provides miscellaneous claims and stale dated warrants for various agencies. Section 34 corrects some prior year accounting transactions. $30,000 for the National Petroleum Reserve account, $1.7 million for a 1986 South Central flood disaster, and $115,000 for corrections in FY89. Section 35, $524,000 for corrections for outstanding obligations occurred in fiscal year 90, and $20.9 to corrections in Section 36 for Correctional Industries Program in FY90. Section 37, 63.3 for the Public Defender Agency for outstanding obligations in fiscal year 90. And then sections 38, 39, 40, and 41 are the FY91 COLA increases for the executive branch, legislative branch, and court system.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, if I could return to section 35 for just a second. To the Department of Corrections. I assume that the expression to pay outstanding obligations is sort of a catch-all for just cost overruns on a variety of contracts or purchasing or whatever. Is that accurate?
I believe so, or plus bills that have come in late.
Mm-hmm.
We can get you a list of these kinds of things if you'd like, but they've submitted to document their request.
I would like to see the list. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Section 42 is part of the COLA legislation the governor had originally introduced. Also, it's for a PSEA agreement arbitration award concerning geographical differentials. Section 43 is also part of the COLA collective bargaining agreements with the master mates and pilots, $79,300. Section 44 is a letter of understanding with the airport safety officer supervisors with the DOT, and it's $77,500.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah, I thought sections 42 and sections 44 were addressed in the supplemental bill last year. My question would be, why are they up again?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be pleased to check on them. You mean the last year, like 1990 session?
Right. We had the arbitration awards for both the court security officers and the airport security officers, and those were both funded in supplementals last year. And I assume that that took care of the problem.
Mr. Chairman, I believe what the situation is that this Section 44 is for the supervisors of those officers who you addressed last year. What happened was, as a result of those agreements last year, you had a situation where the employees were making more money than the supervisors. So they reached a letter of understanding with the supervisors so that they would be paid more than those that they are supervising. And that's what's represented here.
And that's the administration reached that understanding with the supervisor?
Correct.
Okay, just so we get some backup information.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Section 45 was a new one added by the committee, as well as 46, 47, 48, and 49.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman,
Phillips,
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on Section 8 and 34 dealing with floods.
Which section?
8 and 34. One's dealing with a flood in 86, the other one in 89. I guess my question is, why are we dealing with that now, 5 years after the fact, or 3 years after the fact?
Mr. Chairman, on Section 8, I can't speak to why they did not submit these for payment last year. Let's see, we're in 91. Okay, these were costs that were associated with this flood that were not realized until last summer and spring. Okay, so spring of 1991. So this is the first opportunity for those to be brought forward to the legislature.
But, Mr. Chairman, if I can interrupt a little bit. It seems to me that this was brought up last year to last year's administration, and they rejected it.
Mr. Chairman?
They did not declare it an emergency. No, I'm talking about Section 8 now.
Section 8.
We'll deal with 86 later. So I just want to find out the facts.
Yeah, sure, fine.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. As I recall, when we dealt with this last year, we were basically told that this was kind of a paper transaction, that if we did not fund it, it would simply be brought up again at a later time. We did not fund it, and it's being brought up again at a later time. And I assume that if we don't do it again this year, it'll be brought up at a later time.
Is that the same thing with 86? Or much 34? Later time? Yeah.
Section 34?
Section 34?
Yeah, deal with the 86 flood, primarily in your area.
Yeah. It's the same thing.
My understanding is that it's just accounting transactions. They've already been paid. We're not making additional appropriation, at least in Section 34.
Uh-huh. That's correct.
It says $1.7 million in general funds.
Well, if you make it up in general funds, the money that would have been taken up previously, but it
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just ask probably to the subcommittee chair, what difference does it really make to have that paper trail? I mean, if the disaster relief... If it's short, then the legislature considers the possibility of additional funds when we pass the operating budget, doesn't it? So I guess I'm just curious about what the need is to reimburse the fund out of the general fund. And I would ask either Representative Larson or the administration for an opinion on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Waller, my understanding on Section 8 is that the municipality of Anchorage has already incurred a lot of these expenses associated with making the repairs necessary for this flood. So in this sense, I don't believe this one is a paper trail, at least the way the department has presented the information. You know, I could have misread it. And there's a couple of projects, Eklutna Lake Park, Eklutna Lake Trail, and a Chugiak State Park. That facility that has not been completely repaired and needs these additional dollars to do that as a result of flood-related damage. On Section 34, my understanding is that all those costs have been paid except for about $40,000. So it seems to be a different case than Section 8.
Thank you.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be back on Section 12. When you talked about the general funds to fishing game for additional costs of subsistence as a result of McDowell versus State. My understanding is that when McDowell won that case, there was also attorney fees that they were supposed to be compensated for, and I haven't seen that in any of the supplementals anywhere. And I understand that's about $100,000.
Mr. Chairman, that could be under the law, the judgment and claims, and I will check with the Department of Law and see where that is.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, I guess just a general question on House Bill 15. What is the chair's intent on that today?
We're not going to move it out today.
So
we're not going to take amendments to it today either.
The reason I ask is, I'd ask to be excused, and we have a meeting on the mental health board.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. I want to ask a question about Section 47 relating to the Marshall problem. Is the $431,000 adequate to fix the problem?
Mr. Chairman, this was a section added by the committee. I'm not familiar with the details.
My understanding that this is the amount that DEC needed to fix the problem.
Develop a new water system. Section 10. Mr. Chairman, I just note that it's unusual to be appropriating out of the oil and hazardous substance release mitigation account, which the statute contemplates that monies that go into the mitigation account would just be reappropriated over to the response fund, and it is the response fund that has the requirement for cost recovery and so forth. What we're really doing here is diverting money away from the response fund before it gets to the response fund. And I was just wondering, are you comfortable that this legally would not require reimbursement? It would just be the same as general funds, and that is the intent?
That is what the intent is, yes.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you. Section 16 went out of period, and I think was House Bill 147 earlier. I'd asked for some backup from DEC and some details on that, and was given some information that said that at the direction of the previous administration, the department had continued to provide services and expend funds under the project, even though the it was caused by a combination of governor's veto of $800,000 and reduction of some reimbursable service agreements. And is also another item was someone in the section DEC thought that it was a critical nature of the project's activities, and therefore the action was prescribed by supervisors. So I asked for the directives. And the reply was that the direction, the course of action was not, the instructions to DEC and other agencies were apparently not in a documentable type of instruction, so it must have been verbal. To continue funding something that the governor himself vetoed, continue expending money, I can't imagine that. How that could happen to the tune of $707,000. I got a real problem funding things once the boss vetoes it and it isn't overridden. The other thing is Department of Transportation, which is a new one by the committee. I called the Department of Transportation to try to find out where these funds were going to be earmarked, if it was area-wide, statewide or what, and they really didn't have any information on it. So not that there's enough potholes to go around. But,
this is to be applied statewide. The justification for this is that we asked the Department of Transportation when we had them before the committee the first time regarding what level of funding they needed and what the impacts would be if we didn't fully fund it, and their testimony was that it would mean there would be more spring maintenance deferred, and it's my understanding that that is in fact happening, and I think that what the impact, I'm gathering some data on that. The impacts of that are that the roads aren't being
I recall it being our fear at the time that they said
that
they were...
Absolutely. So we decided we'd put it in here, designated to potholes, because that's what it's manifested itself in, is...
Yeah.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 38, I'm a little unclear about the funding source listing there. I wonder if you could just explain to us what the thinking is. I mean, I look down and I see things like the, you know, Tourism Revolving Fund and Child Care Facilities Revolving Fund and all these sources being indicated as a partial funding source.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ulmer, these are currently the funding sources for salaries for existing positions. And all we did is we went to those fund sources and determined which ones would be eligible for a 5% COLA, which off of the PACs run, and then identified those dollar amounts, 5% of the dollar amounts being paid to salaries right now. And this is what the distribution is.
Well, for example, the judicial retirement system, I guess what you're saying is routinely you take a small portion of that to maintain a salary for maybe somebody that's administering the retirement fund, or how does that work?
Currently there is a fund source in the, I assume the court system's budget perhaps. We could go to the PACs run and establish where it is. We have that level of detail as to which positions or which operations are being funded, because this is for salaries. For these positions. And so, yes, currently there is some money out of judicial retirement system that is going to support part of a position, it would appear.
Well, some of them just seem sort of strange. The Historic District Revolving Loan Fund, the Child Care Facilities Revolving Loan Fund. I mean, I'm not aware of there being bodies so tied to that thing. Allison's nodding her head. I'm obviously learning something new here, but I would be curious to see the backup information,
yes.
Particularly the retirement funds. I'll follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry to take the committee's time, but I've never seen that.
Is there anything further? Any other questions? Okay, this bill will be held over. And we'll bring it up later in the week. Okay, back to, I also want to announce that House Bill 25 is going to be held over today also.
I want to go back to
House Bill 1, I mean Senate Bill 158. Commissioner Fisher, there were questions that members wanted to ask Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question, I guess for the department. It's my understanding there are conversations with the quote-unquote taxpayers that prior administration did not send out their assessments on a duly time, and therefore taxpayers did not have, first of all, adequate time to respond, and secondly, know what the tax bill is going to be. And I just want to get a little bit of a get up to date on what's going on and have all the facts laid on the table before I make my mind on this bill. And that's, to me, that's going to be the crucial decision for me on this bill. It's my understanding that the taxpayers had asked for, or at least led me to believe, for the assessments. Assessments were not given to them. So how could they pay a bill when they haven't had the bill? And with the, you know, with the lateness and the penalties and all that other stuff thrown in, I just wanted to find out if this is a fair thing to do, if those circumstances are indeed true.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, I'm not sure that there is a perfect and a satisfactory yes or no type of answer to your question. let me try to share with you what I do know of the subject, and I have heard some of the same things that you have alluded to. By the same token, I have heard the other side of the coin. Going back over many years, it is my understanding that there probably is a sufficient amount of fault on both sides of the fence, both the taxpayer and the taxing entity, that neither one of them probably should do much in the way of throwing stones, living in the glass houses that they do. The taxpayers, in many instances, required the state of Alaska to literally peel an onion in order to perform an audit. By that I mean they were uncooperative, they didn't necessarily assist in seeing to it that these audits were performed timely. There are some very major technical issues involved with almost all of the oil company taxes, issues that I am more and more inclined to believe are probably going to be decided in a court of law rather than in hearings or by resolution. Hopefully we're going to be able to solve a number of them by resolution. On the other side of the fence, to the defense of the companies, the taxpayers, I am sure that in instances they can point to the fact that the assessments were not timely, that they were later amended, that there have been problems that have been brought about by the state of Alaska. I certainly wouldn't want to deny that that has occurred. I would be hard-pressed to believe that that is the rule. I would say that that is probably more the exception than the rule. I believe that this legislation will cause both the taxpayers and the state to come faster to a resolution of these assessments. I'd like to explain once again something that I believe has been explained on a number of times over the years. We have statutes of limitations that the state, any taxing agency, has to work under. And in a number of instances, there have been literally what has amounted to jeopardy assessments that have been brought against these taxpayers. Those assessments were known to the taxpayer to be something way beyond what was true. We were unable to complete the audits, ergo we just simply took the income, no deductions, made an assessment against it, and some of those are still sitting on the books. Since that time, this is over a number of years, some of these audits have come closer to being completed. Some of them are completed. Some of them are, as I understand it from talking with people in oil and gas and income and excise tax, very close to completion. They will get actual assessments. Can these assessments then be later modified? Yes, if current information comes in to the attention of the department. I think in fairness we would either to the state or to the taxpayer amend those assessments. I believe that's the scenario that you've probably been advised of, Representative Phillips, and if my answer is too long, it's only so that I can share with you some of the problems that I think we all have with this situation. I believe Senate Bill 158 is something that is going to be good for the state of Alaska.
Chairman, just probably not aware of it, we just amended the effective date, making it December 31st, yes. 1991, instead of October 31st. Okay. Now, is the department going to have enough time to make these assessments and deliver it in a prompt time to the taxpayers so they can be able to pay it?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Phillips, that is exactly why that originally, I believe, this was dated at September 1 or August 31. I believe there was an amendment in the Senate to then bring that over to October 31st as a result of discussing with Attorney General Charles Cole and myself the fact that a 60-day time frame in there was going to put almost an untenable workload on us in the department. The resolution of it was to take it to October 31. Frankly, I am delighted to see it at December 31. I think that that is much better, again, for all parties concerned. It certainly gives us a better opportunity. We have meetings set up. I know of some starting here within about another 10 days with one of the companies that is to head towards resolution of some of their issues. I think there is the honest, I have felt that there is the honest desire on the part of the major oil companies to resolve these issues. And certainly it's incumbent on us to see to it that they have final assessments. I couldn't deny that at all. And I believe this will give us the time to reasonably, now, nobody's going to be satisfied fully with it.
Are there further questions for the commissioner?
One more, other ones now. This may even give the state government, quote unquote, time, but will it give enough time for the taxpayers to respond, to appeal, or whatever? You know, if I'm thinking more of myself as a property owner, state of Alaska comes in, here's your bill, I dispute it. Is there enough time for all that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, I believe that a way that that can be accomplished is to pay the tax that you believe is correct. That would stop the interest from tolling on at least that portion of it, and it would leave only the portion that is being contested. So there is a way to, if not stop, certainly dramatically reduce the interest.
Whether you can do that as an individual or not. I, as an individual, say with the municipality of Anchorage, dispute their property tax assessment. And so I say, well, it's only worth $1,500. And they say, no, it's worth $2,000. I mean, I'm thinking in those terms rather than megabucks. I'm figuring what's right.
Mr. Chairman, right. Representative Phillips, I don't want to get involved. I wasn't aware that we were involved into an issue of individuals and property taxes.
No, just using that as an example.
As an example, I don't know what your legal remedies would be in a situation like that. I believe that there are legal methodologies, as they've been explained to me, for these large taxpayers, predominantly the oil companies, to reduce their risk to the compounding of interest.
Further discussion. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Well, the chair would entertain a motion. Representative Ullman.
That we move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and ask unanimous consent. As amended.
Are there objections with accompanying fiscal notes?
With accompanying fiscal notes.
Yes. Is there objections? Without objection, so moved.
Yeah,
the only other bill we have up is House Bill 181.
Let's hold it over. I'm tired.
Yes. Well, it's just it needs to go along with
the other one.
Funding that we put already into the supplemental bill and will be considered along with the supplemental for the salary increases. Do you want to discuss this? We'll hold it over when we bring the supplemental back up.
Mr. Chairman, I would just point out that it, unlike the other bill, probably needs to get a committee or two referral on the Senate side. It is a House bill, so we probably can't hold on to it as long as we might hold on to the supplemental.
There's also Senate bill that may move. So. Any further questions for the committee?